Welcome to Geek Tyrants Weekly Podcast. This is podcast number 71. And today we are going to talk about Iron Man 2. We're pretty much going to focus on this movie. It's a big movie. Everyone's been looking forward to it. Everything. People liked it. People hated it. We've got people on our podcast that liked it. We've got people on our podcast that hate it. We've got people who just don't give a crap. And we're going to talk about it all. We'll go into, like, spoilers. We're going to talk about Easter eggs. We're going to just point everything out and just have a big old long chat about Iron Man 2. But first, let's introduce the panel. I am your host, Dr. Venkman. Who else do we have with us today?
I'm Ben
Introduce P. Introduce yourselves.
Ben P. here.
What's up, Ben?
What's going on?
P. Vader's back again.
Of course he is. Why wouldn't he be?
I'm going to go way back. I'm just going to say Mazer from Burbank and actually say where I'm from.
Nice.
Yeah, we used to do that. We used to talk about where we were from. I moved out of the Burbank Glendale area. I am now in the Montrose La Crescenta area.
Fantastic. P. Vader and I are currently residing in Hollywood, so...
See, they're in the heart of everything. They can feel Hollywood's blood flowing.
That's what Geek Tyrant's all about, Dr. Venkman.
Blood.
All right.
Blood flowing, yes. Indeed.
Seriously. Okay, so quickly, we're going to run through the box office numbers. No surprise that Iron Man 2 took the number one spot, bringing in domestically $128.1 million this weekend. So yes, it had a great weekend, and we will talk about that. Number two was Nightmare on Elm Street. There's a huge gap between how much money these movies are making. So we had $128.1 million. Number two, $9.1 million.
Ouch.
Right? Yeah. Number three, 6.6. Number four, I should probably, tell you the titles. Number three, How to Train Your Dragon is still hanging in the top five at 6.6 million.
That's amazing, man. That movie's run has been nothing short of miraculous.
Seriously.
It's going to sell so many discs when it gets out.
Yeah.
True. Very true. We've got Date Night at number four at 5.4 million. Number five, The Backup Plan. I don't even know what that movie's about. $5 million. And number six, Furry Vengeance.
Wow.
Some kind of kids movie, I assume.
Yeah, Brendan Fraser.
$4 million. Oh, Brendan Fraser? Oh, yeah. Yeah. Number seven, Clash of the Titans at 2.5. Number eight, Death at a Funeral at 2.3. Number nine, in its first week release on 534 screens, Babies. 2.1 million. Mazer, go.
That movie is adorable. I haven't seen it yet, but the trailer, this is the premise. It's four babies in different countries and different cultures, and it shows their first year. And my goodness, if you don't, like, die from the cuteness out of the trailer, you're not
you have
a
no
person.
Soul.
You have no soul. You probably kick puppies is what you do on a daily basis just for fun.
I wonder if it's the first movie... about babies for babies.
I don't know. Because literally, it's just shot after shot, and it's just beautiful photography, and it just shows these little moments of these just innocent little children. And it
innocent little babies.
Yeah, it came out
you gotta love the little babies.
Yeah, it came out Mother's Day weekend, so perfect timing, but yeah.
Perfect timing on 534 screens.
Yeah, 2 million for only 500 theaters. That's not bad.
Yeah,
it's not bad. It's not bad at all.
So, I'll probably roll out a little bit more.
Yeah, definitely. So, it does look adorable. It really does. So, I don't know. Maybe it's better than Iron Man 2. Some people might agree. I don't know. I guess we'll talk about that, right?
Babies might agree.
Babies might agree. Babies definitely agree. And number 10, running out of the top 10 for the weekend, we got The Losers, which lost at $1.8 million.
Clever, clever.
Lost to babies.
Lost to babies. The Losers lost to babies. Okay, so Iron Man 2.
No! center.
I'm sorry, he's very eccentric.
I want one.
No.
If you can make God bleed, people will cease to believe in him. They will be blood in the water. And the sharks will come. All I have to do is sit here and watch as the world will consume you.
Our priority is to get the Iron Man weapon turned over to the United States of America.
I am Iron Man. The suit and I are one.
Contrary to popular belief, I know exactly what I'm doing.
What?
What I saw you do to Tony Stark on that track?
Wow.
You need my resources. I want to make Iron Man look like an antique.
This whole lone gunslinger act's unnecessary. You don't have to do this alone.
Displays textbook narcissism. Agreed?
Yeah,
there's a lot of differing opinions here on this panel. You know, I mean, let me start. How about I start?
Absolutely, go
start?
For it. Go
All right,
for it.
I loved it. I loved it. I thought it was a great movie. I had fun watching it, and that's why we go and see these movies, is because we want to be entertained, and this movie succeeded in entertaining me. I understand that it's not, you know, the best structured film. I understand that, you know, maybe there are a few or a lot of little things that just didn't click or make sense. But all in all, as, you know, a guy that likes going to the movies, I was entertained. That's, you know, and that's why I went to see the movie. So I enjoyed it. I want to see it again. And, It was a fun movie. I thought everyone did a fine job in bringing it to life, and I liked it just as much as the original. So there, I said it. Boom. Who's next?
Mazer, go for it.
I enjoyed this film. There's two parts, because I'm basically going to point out there's the critical half, and then there's the fanboy half, and the fanboy is going, hey, I know this character. They just referenced something cool. Da da da. And the other part's going, why the hell was that important to the story? I get it. Why you took so long propping that thing up, you know, that pipe with this other thing. But as a critic, I'm going, I didn't need that moment. And as a fan, I'm going, yes, you're tying it all together.
I love that moment. Exactly. That's and that. So and I think
I love the film on the fanboy level, on the critic level.
You bring up a great point of the differing fanboy level and critic level, because I went into this movie 100% on the level of a fanboy. And I think that's probably why I enjoyed it so much.
Solid. All right, P. Vader, what did you think?
I'm kind of in line with the first guys, you know, like Venkman and Mazer. I enjoyed the movie. I will say I didn't think it was better than the first one. I'm not sure it was supposed to be, but, you know, I feel like I could get nitpicky with it, but overall, I thought it was a fun film. I liked it. You know, like I said, when we transition to BP's review, I'll maybe point out some nitpicky things I have, but overall, you know, I definitely see it again. I'll probably get it on Blu-ray, so That's my review.
See, I have the benefit of having read both reviews, so I know exactly where this is going. So I'm trying to set up the epic battle.
All right.
But even though, I mean, Ben, what was your overall verdict? And then we can get into nitpicks.
Right, okay. Dr. Venkman, you mentioned earlier that some people on this podcast loved it, some hated it, and some just didn't give a crap. I think that might be a bit inaccurate. I didn't hate the movie. I really, really didn't.
Okay.
I want everybody to know that, and I kind of said it last week in last week's podcast, just like in our P. Vader and I's kind of brief impressions on it. I really did like the movie, and that definitely does not come across in my review. I don't know if anybody's read it, but... it didn't come across as much as I wanted it to, because there were just so many things. As a movie, I don't think, you know, I'm falling way onto the critical side of the fence as opposed to the fanboy side here. Iron Man, the original, took everybody by surprise. Like, the movie was just so great, and it was so surprising, and that kind of enhanced its greatness, I think,
for
a lot of people.
Yeah, I think you're right. I don't think people were expecting what they got.
Right.
I think people were expecting, oh, it's going to be another one of those superhero movies. Like, you know, it was during that time where we were all kind of tired of seeing Daredevil and Elektra and
Fantastic
Catwoman.
Four and all that stuff.
Yeah. So I think we were all just kind of like, eh. Iron Man looks cool, but won't hold my breath.
Yeah, we had a lukewarm. We had a great bat. We had Batman, which was great, and we had some X. We had X-Men films that were great, but then we had like a not well received Superman film. So it was always like this kind of, are comic book films happening or not?
Are they here to stay, or is it just like a passing fad? Like, how good can they be? You know, like there's a lot of questions.
And as we know for Marvel. This tipped the scale for Marvel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, anyway, the first one was great. I don't think that Iron Man 2 lived up to the potential of the first one. And, you know, I'll get into it a little bit here in a second.
It touched the bar.
Yeah.
Didn't break it. Right. Didn't pass it. It touched it.
I think, yeah, at certain points it did touch the bar, yes. definitely did not hurdle over it. Okay, I definitely liked the movie, and like you were saying, Venkman, when I was in the theater, like, I was really enjoying it, you know? Like, it wasn't until, it wasn't one of those things where I was sitting with my arms folded across my chest in the theater, like, frowning and, like, shaking my finger at the screen, you know, like, as it was going on, because it does a good job of engaging you, and it's, like, relatively quickly paced, you know? You don't have a lot of time to sit there and kind of wallow in the kind of mediocrity of some parts of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it worked. I mean, it was a fun movie. I had a lot of fun watching it, and I do think it kind of accomplished the goal to entertain you. And that, you know, ultimately, yes, that is what the film set out to do. That and make money, which it did both things very well.
And it wasn't in 3D.
Right, which is admirable in this post-Avatar craze that we've got going on. I mean, there's a lot of good things to say about this movie, and I assume that you'll bring them up over the course of this review. on my side, I'll probably be concentrating more on the things that I kind of took issue with. But
guys are probably going to agree on every part.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure we will.
Yeah, it's not like... I know that the movie had faults.
Right.
I know it did. So I can't not disagree with what any problems that anybody had with it, because you know what? Yeah, they were there.
Yeah.
You know?
But I think
as a fanboy, I guess I just kind of overlooked it and didn't care of any of these little errors that were done, and just sat back and enjoyed the film.
Right, and I think that's a valid perspective, and I think that's something that, you know, probably a majority of the audience out there who saw the film this weekend did, like, took that viewpoint of, like, hey, I saw the first one, let's go out and see the second one, and let's have some fun while we're doing it, and not really look at it as any more consequential than that. But, I think, you know, we'd be doing everybody a disservice if we just stopped it at that. So I, you know, kind of want to take a little while and just point some of these things out and at least hash them out with you guys and see, like, if we could have come up, if we could come up with a way that they could have better integrated some of the stuff or whatever. So
sure.
as far as opening thoughts, I think that's where we all stand. Dr. Bem, you want to try to talk some more about the movie without getting into spoilers, or should we make a spoiler announcement now?
You know, let's make a spoiler announcement now.
Okay.
Let's just throw it out there. I mean, all the hardcore fanboys have seen the movie,
right.
Fangirls, they've all seen the movie already.
Mm-hmm. Or
so,
just save this in your iTunes till
yeah,
you've seen it.
Till you've
come
seen
back.
It. I mean, you've
yeah.
listened to this part already. You know kind of where we stand on it as a very loose foundation. So, and I will say, you know, even though I'm the one who's probably going to be the harshest on this movie, I'll definitely say go see it. You know, that being said, like I said last week, I don't know. It's freaking hard to recommend that people go out and spend, like, you know, $12 to $15 of their hard-earned money these days. So
yeah.
I'm just like, from a conservative standpoint, fiscally speaking, I'm just trying to say, like, yeah, go see it in a theater because it's a cool theatrical experience, but, you know, go see it before noon or something where you don't have to pay full price.
Yeah, and it's also one of those movies I don't think you have to pay the extra to see it in IMAX for.
Yeah.
You can go see it on a regular screen and enjoy it just as much.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah, P. Vader and I saw it in IMAX, and I don't think either one of us really thought that that added much to the experience.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think that's one of the, I guess, problems I might have had with it. I wasn't... The film just looked a little... This could be, like, very nitpicky here, but it just looked a little blurry to me. I don't think it was a projector, but it just didn't look as sharp. I thought it was maybe, you know... It just didn't visually impress me as much. Like, okay, we've entered the spoilers. But when they're, like, flying over Monaco or whatever, I'm expecting to be, like, really wowed at that point. But I was just kind of like, it's kind of like a bland shot. Like, I don't think it was, like, a... John Favreau thing. I think it was a
like an IMAX blowing it
yeah,
up type of thing.
Something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, their technology, was a DRM, their digital something. I forget what it's called, but
right.
it just basically blows up a 35 and it removes the grain from 35 and blows it up to IMAX. And yeah, sometimes you can get good transfers. And I mean, in some cases, like, films will take particular shots and make sure that they have a good IMAX shot for it,
yeah.
Stuff like that.
Yeah,
you see that, like, what Transformers, I think, had particular sequences that were, like, redone
yeah.
for IMAX.
Yeah, and in Revenge of the Fallen, if I don't know if that's the one you're referring to, in the Transformers 2, Michael Bay filmed some of the sequences with IMAX cameras.
Yeah.
But that came out to a really weird effect where, like, it was widescreen, and then all of a sudden it was full screen, and then it was widescreen, where it was in the middle of a sequence. It was the middle of a scene. It wasn't like
The
Dark Knight.
It was in the middle of this huge fight sequence in a forest.
Yeah.
Which was cool, because you could actually theoretically see Optimus Prime head,
like,
to toe
full size. Yeah.
But
it was kind of jarring the way that they cut back and forth between, like, the IMAX shots and the other ones. Like, that's why I think The Dark Knight was so monumental as far as IMAX goes, was because he filmed whole scenes with IMAX cameras.
Yeah,
so you didn't
in
have
sequence,
that switching back and
no
forth.
Switch. Yeah, it's interesting. If you don't really know technically the amount of resolution difference, it's somewhere between, you know, what you have on your little, you know, let's say an iPhone to something like a full-on 1080p HD screen. The resolution difference is huge.
Yeah.
So.
But that being said, there was that one scene in particular, or that shot in particular, that maybe even P. Vader is referencing right now, is the one where, at the very beginning of the Monaco scene, the introduction, where, like, I don't know if you guys remember, you know, this specifically, but there's a helicopter shot that kind of goes over the ridge or whatever, and opens up, and Monaco just kind of, like, drops out beneath
yeah.
you. And I thought that was really,
yeah.
like, that was a cool shot. Like, I thought it looked really good. It didn't quite take my breath away as much as the opening shot of The Dark Knight, where it was just, like, boom, like, entire screen filled, like, you were right there up against that huge glass building. But I thought it was, for not being shot for IMAX, I thought that particular shot was pretty well executed. But...
That
That's
is the
cool.
shot I'm referring to, actually.
Okay.
And that was the one you didn't like.
Yeah.
All right, so let's get a little bit into, like, the character. One of the reasons that I didn't particularly care for this film as much as I did the original was because Tony Stark's kind of a douchebag this time around. Like,
he really was
in the first one, but he was this kind of cocky confident, arrogant guy who became humbled because of this event that happened to him, and then he had to, you know, literally build himself back up.
He felt the responsibility, and,
yeah,
and he could see what his weapons were doing.
Yeah, and became kind of like a people's champion, if you will. You know, realizing what, yeah, exactly, realizing the consequences of his industry and, like, what his company has been doing and all of this stuff, and taking that weight upon his shoulders to fix the situation, to go out and make a difference. Here in Iron Man 2, the film opens with a montage showing that it's been 6 months since the events of the last film. We've seen, you know, 6 months since Tony Stark has revealed his identity to the world. And then it just shows a series of newspaper clippings where, you know, Tony, or Iron Man, solves the peace crisis in the Middle East. Like, just random things that, like, you're like, okay, I guess
so that happened.
Yeah, exactly. I guess one guy can do that in 6 months in an Iron Man suit. I guess
why not?
Yeah. So it doesn't really get much into, like, what he's actually done. And then the first, you know, one of the first couple times we see him is that hearing that he's at. That's one of the first, like, the kind of opening scenes. And he's just a complete ass. Like, he's rubbing it in Justin Hammer's face that he's, like, so much more technologically advanced and smarter than he is. And, like, yeah, there's no need for that. Like, it's, you're freaking Iron Man. You don't have to step on people to get a leg up, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. That's probably a bad example overall, but just there, overall, there is a very, there's a large feeling throughout most of the film of Tony Stark just being a complete douche.
He was, though. That's the thing. I mean, it all comes back, you know, even before the movie was being made or in production, there was a lot of speculation. It's like, you know, oh, it's the demon in the bottle storyline,
mm-hmm.
you know. And this movie, yeah, it took the demon in the bottle storyline and took it to a pretty interesting level, you know. I don't know if that helped the film at all. I mean, there were scenes in there where Tony was dealing with these problems, you know. And I just think some of these scenes were a little drawn out. I think there could have been like 10 minutes cut here or there.
I think the entire Demon in a Bottle storyline could have been removed from the movie, because to me it felt like an excuse for Tony to be like an even bigger ass than he was already being, but instead do it at his own birthday party in the Iron Man suit and start blowing up random pieces of like props and stuff from his own living room. And
I will say that scene was my least favorite scene of the movie.
Yeah, it was.
I hated seeing Tony Stark in that light. And between the fight that went on between him and Rhodey.
Yeah,
it was just kind of like, oh geez, you know.
Yeah, it was, and my.
I mean, that scene was probably my biggest problem of the movie.
There was no danger, because they were fighting, but not really fighting.
Yeah, you knew they weren't gonna really hurt either one of them.
You know, Rodney was gonna get away with the suit.
Rhodey, sorry. Yeah.
You knew Rhodey was gonna get away with the suit, and it was really flat. Really flat.
But the thing was, like, that, I feel like that was the only real exploration into the alcoholism or into the demon in the bottle story.
It took it to, like, okay, Tony has taken this too far.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, it had that, but they could have done that and still, you know, not taken it to the level that it went, I guess.
I feel like you either go big or go home. You either do it where half the movie is devoted to him, like, drinking because of his newfound drinking because he finds out that Whiplash can replicate his technology, and the consequences of, like, oh wow, I'm really not the only person who can do this, and there are people out there who aren't as, you know, pure hearted, so to speak, as I am, who are going to do this to hurt people, and I'm, you know, partly responsible for this. Like, I feel like if they would have taken it where those consequences weighed heavily on Tony, and then he turned to alcohol because of that or something. I feel like that would have been a little bit more effective use of it.
Yeah, they just kind of threw it in there and said, okay, Tony is drinking a lot now.
Yeah.
But he didn't even drink throughout the whole thing. He only drunk on his birthday right before the party. Before then, he was drinking everything he could to keep himself alive and healthy. And
Yeah.
I mean, that he was keeping away from alcohol, so I don't know if...
Right. So maybe he just, fell into, they really didn't, I guess they let the events of the movie show us why he was, why he went that route, why he was drinking.
Now, I just wonder where they're going to go with this third film, because they basically had, at the beginning, he talks to the Stark Expo, and he goes, my story is the Phoenix rising from the ashes. Well, guess what? The Phoenix rose from the ashes again in the second film. Are they going to do it again in the third film?
Yeah.
I mean, is he going to be, get full of himself and then get humbled and then
they can't do that again. Well,
but the thing is, he didn't do that here, I don't think. Like, I don't think he got full of himself and got humbled. I don't think he ever hit that point where he had any sort of humility in this one. I feel like the entire movie progressed and he... just, figured out, thanks to Howard Stark's,
now he's not smartly hidden
code in the mock-up of the Stark Expo from the 50s.
He did that so the Mandarin wouldn't be able to find it. You know that, right?
Yeah, that's another thing, is, I'm not... I don't know how much you're joking or how much you may or may
I'm
not
dead
be
serious.
Okay, That was another fundamental issue that I think I had with the movie, is that I honestly was not an Iron Man fan going into Favreau's 2008 film. I knew nothing about the character really, aside from just very peripheral knowledge. I never read Iron Man comics. I never watched any TV or whatever. That character was never on my list of badass comic book heroes.
So that was actually in the comic.
What? The thing about
the map being
No. I'm just throwing
that out there. Okay, right.
But
just throwing that out in the wind.
For me personally, and I'll bring it back to another film as an example. The Louis Leterrier's Incredible Hulk. I didn't particularly care for the parts of the movie, and this is going to sound weird, where Edward Norton was the Hulk. You know what I mean? I prefer watching the actor, especially in the past few years with the way that comic book movies have turned to legitimate sources of both income and critically and commercially successful films. They've been able to lock down some really great A-list casts for these movies. I mean, this movie is, obviously evidenced by... Academy Award, or not Academy Award winning, but I don't think anybody in that...
Nominated.
Maybe Don Cheadle might have won an Academy Award. I don't know. I'll have to look that up later. But, some nominees, some, legitimately great actors and actresses. Same with Jeff Bridges in the first one. These actors are high-quality actors, and I like watching them work more than I like watching the CG versions of... their characters smash stuff. That was my biggest kind of complaint about the Incredible Hulk, the Leterrier version from a couple of years ago, was because he was just rampaging through the city and just destroying stuff, and I didn't care. That being said, as a kid, I would have loved that movie. I'd love those parts way more than anything that Edward Norton could have done. The same goes for Iron Man 2. I would have, as a kid, I feel like I would have freaking loved Iron Man 2 because... you have that scene, that we were talking about with Rhodey and Stark battling it out in their house, as just smashing stuff, throwing each other into walls, and just being reckless and doing
all
that stuff.
I didn't necessarily have a problem with that. I thought they dragged it out a little too long. I think that scene was there for a reason and it had to happen, but
they broke through too many floors of the Stark mansion.
There came a point where it was like. When you watch a Family Guy and Peter's battling the chicken, now it just kind of goes on, and you're just like, okay, we can move on now.
It becomes an excuse for, hey, as Family Guy writers, we're not going to write anything for 5 minutes because insert chicken fight here. Type of
insert
thing.
This head spinning ball.
But, Ben, I think you need to, you know, kind of find your inner child again.
That's fair enough. I will say that my inner child is found in films like the Batman series and other comic book movies. I just feel like this one in particular, because it relies so heavily, and I think maybe Batman is a good example, not only because Nolan's films are fantastic, but because the hero himself, you can still see the face, you know, like the it's not a completely CGI creation, and something about that kind of that presence, that human presence, is a lot more relatable to me than just watching something that's clearly a CGI creation on screen battling against another CGI creation on screen. And, you know, and I'm saying there's a time and a place for that, and Iron Man is definitely probably the time and the place for that. I just think, this is a personal preference that I like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm just bringing up a personal preference.
I'm just trying to think to a sequence where there's, you have a pretty much a fully CG Iron Man versus Whiplash when they first meet, because there's no way Robert Downey can fit in a suit that small, because it's pretty much his exact proportions just in a suit.
Right.
And I felt there was a lot of danger in that particular sequence, when it was just the suit Iron Man versus Whiplash. Because you're seeing things get cut in half.
No, like, I mean, what's gonna... that was a... Yeah, definitely. I agree with you. I agree with you on that. I think there definitely was a sense of danger in that scene. That Tony could have been killed easily. Easily could have been killed.
Yeah, what did you...
Had Happy not, you know, come running in with the suitcase armor to help him out.
Oh, yeah. No, I completely agree. P-Vader, what did you think about the Monaco scene, that whole sequence?
Because I felt after that, there was no more danger.
Yeah, maybe, and once Tony, you know, beat him and he was in prison, from the trailer, we knew what was going to happen from there. We knew that... Justin Hammer was going to get him out, and that he was going to, you know, give him all the tools he needed to, you know, bring Iron Man down and to beat Tony Stark at his own game and developing weapons and stuff like that. And you knew the whole time that, you know, Whiplash was going to double cross Justin Hammer. And it's just one of those things where it's like, you know, it's just one of those formula movie things where it's like you see it from a mile away.
Well, no thanks to the freaking trailers that gave away literally every action scene. Like, that was another thing where I only saw, I think, the first trailer. Maybe if there was a teaser, I saw that, and then, like, the first official trailer or something. But I've been trying on a personal level to not watch as many trailers recently, just exactly for this reason. Where, like, you see, and I said it in my review, this movie had time in the trailer to show every single action sequence, and then show the opening part of the trailer, which is the "you complete me" thing of him skydiving out of the back of the thing, which wasn't even in the movie. Like,
yeah, it wasn't in the movie.
Not only
that
did
was,
they have enough time...
That was
time,
just for the trailer.
Yeah,
just
enough time to reveal all of these huge things. They also had time, oh yeah, we're just going to throw this in even though it's not in the movie, but hey, we're still going to take what little time we do have to let you know exactly how this movie's going to play out, connect the dots, you know, that kind of thing. But anyway, P-Vader, what were you going to say about Monaco?
Yeah, well, yeah, you kind of hit on it with the trailer, and Venkman did as well. I kind of felt, when you see that scene in the trailer, it's either going to be towards the beginning of the movie or at the very end. And then when you see it in the beginning, you're like, okay, well, Iron Man can't lose this early on. So it kind of was, it had a lack of suspense for me. I could more or less guess the outcome. And it did fall a little flat. You're right.
Well, what do you think about it as a kind of the action in the scene? Like, regardless of its predictability, like, did it work for you as far as like, oh, that was a cool scene, or were you just kind of like, I know where this is going. Like, I'm just breezing over this.
See, that was me. I was, you know, when a cool scene would happen, I'd be all into it. You know, I'd be watching. I'd be like, oh, this is awesome. You know, eye candy. You know, whatever. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, yeah, when a scene like that would pop up, you know, most of the action scenes in the film I thoroughly enjoyed. One gripe I have about the action sequences is a final action sequence between
Yeah,
Rhodey we'll get to that one.
We'll get to that one in a little bit.
Okay,
we'll work our way chronologically, yeah. possibly by character.
Yeah,
yeah. I don't think in terms of action, I don't think I had a problem with that scene in terms of action. Like I was entertaining, and at least that was not predictable. But the final outcome of that scene was kind of like typical. Like here's a villain introduction scene.
I think. You know, this is one of my kind of major problems with the film, is that the character of Whiplash, who, by the way, the name Whiplash is never actually spoken in the film, just a little bit of trivia there. So the only reason we know his name is Whiplash is from press releases and plot synopses before the movie came out. Otherwise, you would have no idea. is that Whiplash, by definition, you look at him... Yeah, he looks like an imposing villain. Yes, he's technologically advanced, or, you know, intellectual, whatever. Like, he's got the kind of smarts to put this suit together. But he limits himself by putting a limit on the length of these whips. You know what I'm saying? Like, Iron Man can freaking fly. Why, as Iron Man, as Tony Stark, who is obviously one of the smartest men in the world in this Marvel Universe, to be able to build an entire Iron Man suit out of rocks and rubble and you know, sheets of metal in an Afghani cave in the first film, why does this same guy, who is clearly an intelligent guy, why does he go in close to fight a guy who has, you know, 15-foot-long whips? Why wouldn't he take a couple steps back and assess the situation? Like, you know what I mean? Like, with just a guy, you see a guy, just put yourself in that situation. You see a guy, you're walking down the street, you see a guy with a whip. Are you going to run at him?
Hey,
or are you going to try to pull out a gun from 20 feet back and shoot him?
Time out, Ben.
Indiana Jones style.
Time out. Have you ever fought a guy with a whip before?
No, I've fought a guy with two whips, but not one. No.
Because, you know, from personal experience, you know, being, you know, fighting people with whips,
right.
You got to get in close. Getting in close is the key. If you run away, that whip can, like, you know, take you out.
He can't. I don't know.
You got to get in there. You got to get in. You got to get the whip.
Obviously, this is a nitpick on my part, because this character existed in the comic book world, but I have the same, you know, my same issue stands in the comic book world of, hey, Iron Man has the same powers there, why doesn't he hover 30 feet above his head and just constant rapid fire shoot pulse beams down? You know, somebody commented on my review saying, like, yeah, jackass, I saw that that you didn't like the fact that he was going, you know, about, like, shooting pulse beams at him all day, and I don't know if you watched the movie, but Whiplash deflected the pulse beams with his whips, and I'm like, okay, that's fair enough, he's not gonna be able to do that every single time. He can't use the force. This isn't Luke Skywalker deflecting freaking pulse beams from, you know, Imperial whatever guns. Eventually, you're gonna be able to wear him down. Okay, I realize this is a ridiculous argument, and that's where I'm gonna stop with that. I'm just saying. I'm just trying to point it out.
It was fun. Okay, yeah. It was fun. We had a good time. We had a good time.
Okay. I don't know. Anybody else want to bring up something?
As a villain, though, what'd you think of Mickey Rourke as Whiplash? I thought he did a great job.
I thought he did the best that he could, but I would have loved to see that character and the Justin Hammer character merged together, where he is secretly this guy's son the entire time, and he builds up all this stuff, and he secretly builds up all this armament. He almost can touch Iron Man, but he doesn't get the technology until Rhodey brings back the suit to be retrofitted as War Machine, and that's when he gets the missing piece of technology he needs to become Whiplash. That is the story I would have done.
Okay.
Well, you didn't, and it's not going to happen, so you have to live with what was done.
What a condescending response. I love that. That's great.
I didn't even think about that. I just thought of that right now. I was like, I would have liked to see an intelligent person wear this suit and try to... Because I didn't believe it. I didn't believe it, and not only that, it's everything he did was not what a smart person of that intelligence would do.
Now here's the thing with with Whiplash is he didn't do this on his own. He was being helped out by the Mandarin, the Ten Rings terrorist organization.
What?
Who was not seen on screen, who was not alluded to in text, who was not seen...
What are you talking about? Are you serious?
I'm dead serious.
How do you know this? Where...
Jon Favreau said in an interview that the Mandarin was in the film. There were certain aspects of the film that the Mandarin would be in there that would they were controlling things in the
there
background.
There might be stuff in the third film where we reveal in some sort of flashback.
Well, the thing is like they're building up to the third film where the Mandarin will be the main villain. But like in this film, I mean, yeah, they don't show it, but it's all in the background. It's all off screen stuff. The people that were Whiplash was being helped by the organization. Like, for example, the guy that gave when Whiplash is in the alley and the guy walks up to him, hands him the envelope.
The envelope
contains the credentials to get into the Monaco, you know, race thing, whatever. That person that handed him that envelope was part of the terrorist organization.
Okay. If
you wouldn't get it if you have not been, you know,
and I can understand
everything that Jon Favreau was saying and in the interviews and stuff. I mean, if you're not, you know, online, like, reading all this stuff or whatever, people are definitely going to miss it. But yes, the Ten Rings were there.
And I understand it. I understand that because I think, when you have a villain who you believe is a villain, and then you find out that they're actually working for someone, it actually makes them a lot less of a villain.
Yeah, and it also
when the Emperor is behind Darth Vader, suddenly Darth Vader doesn't look like the man in charge.
The ultimate badass
He's a servant.
And you never know how far back it goes, because you look at, you know, Whiplash's father, who is kind of betrayed by Howard Stark and deported, and who's to say that back then, because the Mandarin is a timeless enemy, you know, a villain. And so who's to say that back then when, you know, Howard Stark banished him and had him deported from America, where he didn't get involved with this organization. So I think that's why there's this, you know, that Whiplash was able to do a lot of this stuff and get a lot of the stuff that he needed to create the suit. I don't know.
Yeah,
I mean,
honestly,
a lot of this is just theory, but...
That never even crossed my mind that any of that, you know, any of the stuff that we've been talking about for the last 2 or 3 minutes, like, yeah. I completely, it just went over my head. Like, there were, you know, you mentioned that one part where a guy gives him, whatever, a suit or money or something to get into credentials or something to get into the race. I completely forgot that was in the movie. With as much as I have been trying to pick this movie apart, that one thing, like, I completely... It blew past me. Like, I did not pick up on it. And that was one of my complaints, was that, like, they didn't even allude to, well, apparently, I guess that
it
was...
It just seemed like he was getting it black market. That's what it
yeah,
seemed like.
Yeah, or that,
Russian mafia.
That or... Justin Hammer was helping him out, you know, as far as afterwards goes, you know, he goes to Monaco, destroys the car. By the way, what's his end game there? Like, I assume he plans on, like, killing him on the spot and then, like, fails and then kind of gives up.
When Tony was saying, you could have ran this at double the cycles.
Yeah.
You could have done this. You could have done that. You could have...
Right.
He was basically saying you could have had the Iron Man hand weapon, is what he was alluding to. He was like, why did you make whips? And he was like, well, if I can just make you bleed, then there's going to be...
That's
all I need to do.
Yeah,
I just need to make you bleed.
He wanted to torture the hell out of him.
I understand, and I think in a you know, and I hate to take it back to Batman, but I'm going to do it again. In a universe like Batman's, where there's already pre-established villains who are out there, and even the Mafia is like a huge presence in the Batman world. We haven't seen that in Iron Man. The only people that we've seen so far as villains are, you know, the kind of Ten Rings organization, the terrorists who captured him in the first film, and then Obadiah Stane as freaking Ironmonger or whatever. In this one, it's like, I see what Whiplash is saying by, like, wanting to make the god bleed or whatever, but, like, I don't understand his motivation for that. Like, what has given him the idea that there's going to be these other villains that come out of the woodwork, and especially to break him out of prison and help him, you know, like, how could he possibly foresee that? There's nothing, we haven't been given any indication that there are other kind of maniacal people out there, you know, who are out to get Tony Stark, or who have, you know, the world's a relatively peaceful place at this point in the film. Like, there's nobody, there's no, like, rebellion, there's no... You know what I'm saying? Like, there's no, I don't know.
It wasn't
like they
got him out of prison early. He's tattooed head to toe, and he was there. He served all 15 years. It wasn't like this organization broke him out and kept him deep cover and taking care of his father. He was just building this stuff.
No. I'm talking about when, I see what you're saying with that. No, I mean, right after he does the Monaco thing, he ends up in a prison.
No, what was his end game?
Yeah, and then...
Well, I could clearly see that all he wanted to do was get the fact that he could hurt Iron Man, and he knew...
Yeah, get that out in public, and just he just assumed that other people would pick
because,
up where he left off.
If you have that technology, sure, you could sell it on the black market, sure, you could try to, you know... That's what Tony was saying, is you could have sold this on the black market, you could have done this, you could have done that, but he didn't.
Well, I just feel like because nobody else, because he was the first person to do that, I just, like, logically speaking, I just don't understand why he would assume that there are other people that could have done it. Because if other people could do it, why didn't they beat him to the punch? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. That's just a small thing where during the movie, I was like, wait, so he, the Joker in The Dark Knight, he freaking planned out that jail sequence. Like, he went to jail on purpose to... You know, to serve as a means to an end. I feel like Whiplash just kind of ended up there and then lucked his way out after Justin Hammer, you know, saw his exploits and was like, hey, yeah, bring me that guy. Like, I just feel like Whiplash going in was like, all right, I'm just gonna have to hope that some eccentric billionaire sees me and likes my style and
especially when he needed. It's funny because my wife pointed out, like, why is he so, if he's this physicist, why is he looking at the guy that looks exactly like him and looking at his number on his thing and looking at it, just to telegraph it so ham-fistedly to the audience. It could have been a lighter touch and it could have been a lot more, he got it, he understood what was going on. The second he sees that guy, we just cut and then there's an explosion and he's walking out.
Yeah,
and then
you just
see the dead body. That's all we needed, and that would have been, like, half the time.
Right. And I think it would have implied a level of kind of intellectual superiority that might have been a little bit more scary than showing every action in it, every cut of that stuff, like showing how he did it. Like, it would have been a little bit more mysterious of like, oh wow, this guy is he knows what's up. Like, he just completely wrecked that guy and we didn't even see it and he walks out.
Yeah.
But P. Vader, what did you think about Sam Rockwell as Justin Hammer?
I'm not sure I was ever really afraid of him.
I don't think you're supposed to be.
Yeah, he's
just not supposed to be. You weren't supposed to. I think he was just, you know,
that guy.
He wants to be, you know, he admires Tony Stark, and he wants to have what Tony Stark has, but he can't seem to get there. So he's that guy that will do whatever it takes to you know, go out and break the law or steal and kill and do whatever it takes to get what Tony Stark has, you know, cheating his way up.
I will say one of the parts I liked best, and I really hope it wasn't a body double, but when he walks across the stage doing the Michael Jackson stuff.
That was him. Have you seen the first Charlie's Angels?
No, yeah, I have.
He dances.
That's
his signature little shuffle. That's his dance.
That's what he does. And not only that, but I don't know if you noticed this too, but when he came out there doing a signature dance move, the song that was playing was Pick Up the Pieces, which is a nod to Jon Favreau's Swingers. So he came out with the signature dance with a little Swingers.
Nice.
Nods.
He was so money, he didn't even know it.
Exactly. So I definitely thought that was cool.
Yeah, I have a little... As much as I already like Sam Rockwell, I like him even more now, knowing that was actually him doing that dance.
There's nothing I think he could have done as an actor to have portrayed that character better. I think
I think he did a great job.
I think he did a great job.
No problems with how he portrayed Justin Hammer. He really... He nailed it. He nailed it.
With how that character was written, he did it as yeah.
And I'd like to see him come back in the third movie. You know,
he's got to.
It's a character I would love to see.
But how does he come back as any kind of threat? Or maybe he's just there for comic relief.
Or he just gets serious real quick and starts like putting stuff together and he loses his comic edge.
Or he gets
and just
he gets
like
recruited.
A darker character.
Well, he joins the Ten Rings. You know.
Yeah.
Never, just
yeah, I loved his.
He wants
his,
to get ahead. I mean, you're going to go to where you can do it.
Yeah, his exit of the film was like something out of an old like Looney Tunes cartoon or something. Like the cops are dragging him off, and he's like, "I'll get you yet, Gwyneth Paltrow.
Yeah.
Mark my words, this is not
Mark
the last.
My words, I'm going to get you, kids."
Yeah.
Yeah. So
that was pretty great.
Yeah, he was cool. What'd you guys think of Scarlett Johansson as Black Widow?
She just stood and looked pretty and then did some fighting. And
but she looked pretty.
There was no acting.
And
she
did. She totally kicked ass.
She did. That was.
She did.
I loved.
The way that was shot was very cool.
Yeah, it was very cool. I mean, watching her fight was, you know, some of the.
You had this feeling because, you know, they just do this counterpoint move with the camera and stuff like that. So you. When she's twisting around the guy, it seems like it's even faster than it's really happening, and it's really cool because it just feels so fluid.
Yeah.
And there's quite a few cuts, actually, but the way the cuts are done, it doesn't feel like you're watching those old action films where it's just chop city. It just feels like we have to cut this much because she's moving that fast, and we're trying to show you the best angles. It didn't feel...
I thought it was weird because it's kind of like one of those things where it's like a love-hate type relationship where it was like, I loved when she was fighting and she, you know, totally kicking ass and action-packed, but when she wasn't, she was the most boring character in the movie.
Yeah. And I'm sorry, but Happy's character getting that one guy was completely unnecessary.
I kind of enjoyed the gag of him taking down one guy while she takes down like 12 or something. Like, I don't know. I thought that was was cheap humor, but
I would have tightened it up and left him for the special features. Yeah,
yeah, that's probably true.
Maybe,
too.
Yeah. It felt really indulgent to me.
I liked it. I'm just saying, what's up?
I think I liked everything about Scarlett Johansson. I liked when she was not fighting. I liked when she was fighting, but. I don't know. Maybe I'm just a sucker for Scarlett Jo.
I think
sucker for her pretty redhead.
Yeah.
It was funny because Tony was describing how good she is at basically being three people. I was like, she was being one person. How is she being three different people?
Yeah, I didn't get that line either. he said something. Yeah, that three person. I'm like, who's the third? What? What's going on? I don't get that. Yeah.
How's there two? There's her in fight mode, and then there's her. Holding a binder. It was like two things.
P. Vader and I were talking before we saw the film of like, I can't remember the last time I saw Scarlett Johansson on the big screen. Like, it took us a while to figure it out. And I think at one point I'd settled on, for me, it was The Prestige back in 06. And then later I realized that I saw The Spirit in theaters and that was in 08 and she was in that. But she was a very minor character in that. But for somebody who was like so... in the public eye for a long time, like she was in a lot of movies over a few year stretch.
Usually these actresses try to get out as many films as they can while they're young.
Yeah,
I'm sorry
exactly.
to say, but
and
they do try to do that.
I feel like she dropped off a little bit towards the end of the 2000s, and I hope this is a start for her because a lot of times her acting, for me personally, is very hit or miss. Like,
yeah,
like,
I agree.
She always looks great, but as far as whether or not I believe her as a character, is dependent on the film and the people that she surrounds herself with.
She's not able to elevate material in the same way, probably, like an Ian McKellen or a Robert Downey or... I'm trying to think of another actor, but
I just don't think that
Patrick Stewart could lift out a crappy material possibly and just give a great performance.
Yeah, and who's to say she doesn't have the potential to do that? It's just something that we haven't seen from her yet. But I thought I was pleased, you know, watching her on the screen. I was like, okay, this is a, you know, I don't hate this performance. Like I didn't think she was bad because she's been like downright bad in a lot of the stuff that she's been in. And this, I was like, okay, I'll take that. Yeah, I'll take that. And, you know, she had a little bit of sass to her, but I don't know. You could tell that she was kind of the least experienced out of this cast, because the cast is pretty great all around.
Yeah,
and she
it's
was,
pretty,
she was
it's
definitely
very solid cast.
The
you
weak
really
link.
Go wrong.
Yeah,
I would say. Although I was happy with her role in the film, I was and Ben, you kind of mentioned this in your missed opportunities.
Yeah,
you labeled it as that. With Pepper Potts, I felt like she didn't get enough coverage. And then the whole her running like the CEO when she was CEO of Stark Industries, I was kind of like I wanted to see more of it. And
it was actually interesting seeing her.
Yeah,
yeah. Know, taking care
and
of
she
things.
Was pretty much managing Tony Stark.
Yeah, and I mean she
trying to keep him under control and pretty
which
much,
is classic to her character, but she's actually doing it in a role as CEO, which we haven't seen in the comic books,
right? And or in the movie before, we saw her. You know, essentially she is, you know, she takes care of the business side of stuff, and Tony, you know, often his gallivanting ways just comes back to occasionally sign a document or something. Like she essentially ran the company anyway. So to see Tony hand the reins of Stark Industries over to her, I was like, okay, this is a really cool opportunity for them to explore,
yeah,
you know, not only Pepper Potts as a character doing this, but to make a statement about, you know, about women in position of authority in a corporate setting, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like that opportunity was completely wasted, because essentially the only time we ever saw her as CEO was, I think, one or two scenes where she was just, like, barking at somebody on the phone, like, okay, yeah, make it happen.
Yeah, they
and,
really
like,
didn't. And then it came to the point where there's too much pressure and she quit.
Right.
So you're just like, oh, then, so they're not even going to continue that, huh?
Yeah, and then there was no resolution at the end of it. Favreau zooms out while she and Tony are standing on the roof of that building at the end going, like, you know, she's like, I can't take this, and they kind of, like, kiss and make up or whatever, and then he's like, I don't accept your resignation, and they're like, ah-ha-ha-ha. And then I'm like, but what happens to Stark Industries? Like, where does this leave us? Like, what is going on? And, you know, again, not that it really matters, because even if Tony is back as CEO, Pepper's going to do all the work anyway, but...
Yeah, exactly.
But I'm just, you know, I felt like they had a big opportunity, a big chance to kind of show us some cool stuff from her, and I feel like she... And probably it was because there were so many other characters and so many other things going on that it was just a matter of time. Like, they literally just couldn't fit a lot of it into the movie. But I would like to think that they at least shot some material that ended up getting cut. Just because I feel like that's a legitimate plot point in the movie.
Yeah.
Like, I felt like that deserved more attention than it got.
And I've got to say, they have they have the best banter on screen.
Yeah. They're pretty great. I generally don't care for Gwyneth Paltrow, but I like her a lot as Pepper Potts.
Yeah.
They gave Nick Fury, Samuel L. Jackson, a lot more screen time this time around.
Yeah,
it seemed essential to introduce some of the stuff with the father and to
legitimize him to set up a lot
Black
of stuff
Widow and...
for the Avengers and, you know, in the third Iron Man film. I mean, it's like...
I think he was there enough and not too much. I think
yeah.
It was just the right amount.
I think his presence was enough. I think what he actually revealed as far as plans and stuff and things of that sort, they left me wanting more, and not in like a not in a good way, not in like, oh yeah, this is great, like I can't wait to the next one, like more of like, oh man, I really wish they would have shown me more right then, like I don't know, like, my mom called me after the movie, and she's like, okay, now, who is Samuel L. Jackson again? Like, what is going on? And I'm like, you know, you take a step back out of our kind of geek world, and you realize, like, okay, people who didn't stay for the credits of
yeah,
Iron
I was just
Man gonna
1 say,
have
yeah, there's
no
a whole
idea
bunch of people.
Who he is.
I mean,
and then,
when I went,
yeah.
When I went and saw Iron Man 2, you know, tons of people walked out of the theater right after it
yeah.
ended, and I'm like, dude, you're gonna miss...
Yeah.
You know, you're gonna miss... Thor.
Yeah,
yeah.
And it was like, yeah. So a lot of people don't stay after the credits.
They don't. The particular screening I went to was the midnight screening, and you have the hardcore fans who had all the good seats, and the people who came late, you know, the 30 minutes before, going, oh no, wow, it's so crowded. Duh. They sat in the front. Well, guess what? Everyone in the front left as soon as the credits were. No one in the middle or in any good seat even moved because they know
spots? Yeah.
They know you wait after the credits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's for the fans.
I don't know if you noticed this or not. It was in my post of little Easter eggs in the movie. But did you notice that Nick Fury you know, obviously you noticed because he gave a whole speech about how he knew Howard Stark better than Tony ever knew him.
Mm-hmm.
So what age does that put Nick Fury at?
Oh, yeah. We know Nick Fury is way older than he looks.
Nick Fury is freaking old.
Yeah.
So I just thought that was cool. I don't know how many people caught that or not.
Yeah.
But,
I'm wondering if they'll show if he'll show up in Captain America in like a kind of like a skin tight bodysuit or something
with both eyes.
He fought with Captain America in World War II, so I don't see why they wouldn't do that. I think it'd be awesome if they did, and I hope they do.
Yeah,
but I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, I don't know. For me, like, it felt like another missed opportunity of just like, you know, they. Again, going back to the thing where like my mom didn't even know who he was. Like they really didn't. He didn't really establish. Like if you aren't a comics fan, if you aren't like a geek like us and kind of know a little bit about that character going in, if you just look at it from what is presented on the screen, like there's really not a lot there.
Yeah, because we just see him. He goes, "Oh, I thought you were a figment of my imagination," and people will go, "Why is he a figment? Why would we?" Yeah.
There are so many things in this movie that go behind, like, would cause so much discussion among geeks if they're looking. If people aren't looking, you know, they're not going to see it.
Well, but
there's so many Easter eggs, there's so many little things, so many little minute details in this film that comic book fans, fanboys, fangirls would drool over. But it's like they don't – it's like in the background. They don't make a big scene about it. I mean, you could make a whole movie based on any of these little things that they're having – you know, that they've placed in this movie for the fans.
Well, do you want to highlight some real quick? I mean, we could talk about the Captain America's shield that was
– Well, Captain America's shield, I mean, everyone saw that.
Yeah.
There was no way to miss that.
There's no way to miss it. I'm surprised how many people still missed it from the first movie. Because there's, you know, there's a lot of people that I've talked to that I've, you know, I figured that they've already known this, that the Captain America shield made an appearance in the first movie, but apparently a lot of people didn't know that.
Right.
You know, it's just the people online that maybe
that are looking at the screen caps and seeing the kind of blown up, zoomed in pictures of it and stuff, and go like, yeah.
And so they did this scene where, you know, where Tony's like, hey. Could you bring that over to me? That's exactly what I need. That is my answer.
Yeah, I thought that actually fit pretty well with Tony's character, too. That he's just like, he has no sense for history. Like,
I had no idea what was going to come. I thought there's like some big reveal was going to happen.
And even,
and they're like, I'll just shove it under there. We got to level this thing.
And he's like, do you know what this
exactly.
is?
Yeah, exactly. Even Agent Coulson.
Yeah, I do.
Agent Coulson's like, are you freaking serious? You're going to use this as like a glorified like doorstop or something? Like, do you know like how much power this thing has? And he's like, yeah, throw it under there. I don't care. But I thought that was pretty cool. What's some of the other things you were talking about? Where like just these minute things in the background?
The shield was
there's a lot of. Oh wait, what are you gonna say?
Oh, the crate that had the shield in it was from Antarctica, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of Antarctica stuff in here. There's the crate had a map, the Howard Stark crate that Fury gave Tony.
Mm-hmm.
In there was a map of Antarctica and there could be some speculation. I think they're placing Captain America in Antarctica. So there is a possibility that there's this whole thing there with, you know, finding, you know, during that time when they were looking for Captain America and, you know, where that.
Yeah, wasn't there, from The Incredible Hulk, which I referenced earlier, from
there's
that
an alternate
thing.
Opening.
Yeah.
There's an alternate opening, and I believe it takes place in Antarctica.
Yeah, I remember seeing a screenshot of Bruce Banner in Antarctica and seeing like a kind of faded out Captain America like in the ice behind him or something, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, all right. I just wanted to make sure I was remembering that correctly.
So, but in the comic book, Captain America was found in the near the North Pole.
Okay.
But, you know, because of the whole movie thing, you never know. They can do whatever they want with the movies and place them in Antarctica if they want.
Who knows if the Incredible Hulk thing was something that's, you know, legitimately going to be played for detail or if that was just something to kind of
Exactly. That's why I'm not sure.
Right,
you know?
Right.
So, we don't really know yet. But yeah, it's a good, you know, to just suspect, you know, good speculation. Totally. The other things that it could possibly be is they could be pointing to the Savage Land, which is a Marvel's lost world of like dinosaurs and jungle that are in a crater.
I remember seeing the X-Men animated series, and they went there a couple times.
Exactly. So that could be something somewhere along that line. But then also there's a deposit of, you know, the Marvel mineral or metal vibranium.
Mm-hmm.
Was first discovered in Antarctica, so that could have something to do with it as well. So there's, you know, there's several different things that, you know, why they had a map of Antarctica.
Yeah. A lot of seeds that they planted that may or may not actually bloom into something on screen
exactly.
in later films.
Exactly. You never know.
Yeah.
Do we know what material that Iron Man made, the new material that he invented, that was put together?
Iron Manium, I think. No, I don't know. I don't think they ever gave it a name.
They did not mention it. They did not say what it was, but it you know, there's speculation. You know, there's a lot of speculation on what it could be, but they don't really say what it is.
That'd be sweet if it was like adamantium or something. That just makes no sense.
There's a metal that takes and this is the speculation. I can't remember what the metal's called, but it's a metal that was made using vibranium and adamantium.
Ah, wasn't that far off.
Yeah, so it's like it's a combination of the two.
Yeah.
But they don't really say if that's it.
It's some other super material.
Yeah, it's something else.
Yeah.
And it's something that has never been able to been reproduced. It's only been done once, apparently. So, I don't know. We'll see.
All right, so you want to talk about the ending of the film, the kind of final... Or should we talk about Don Cheadle? We haven't mentioned him yet.
Yeah, well, Don Cheadle was awesome.
I think there was a different performance style that he had from Terrence Howard. Because Terrence Howard had this very much feeling like younger brother looking up to big brother, in their first film. And it was kind of like...
Their relationship was very like palatable.
Yeah, that felt like they were really... there was a connection there. And in this one, I don't think... It didn't feel like there was a connection. It didn't feel like they were enemies or anything weird like that. It just felt like I didn't see the chemistry on screen. And, I mean, I love Don Cheadle. My favorite film with him is, like, Traffic. And I just feel like he was a bit... It didn't click. There was no chemistry, I think, at all.
Yeah.
See,
when they teamed up,
I thought there was. I thought it was fine, but that's just me. I thought that they had a good relationship thing going there.
Yeah, I bought the relationship. I like what's his name, Terrence Howard, better, but that could just be because I saw him first. I got the sense that they might have been trying to feature Rhodey less than they did in the first one because of. of the actor change, but you know, that's
me. I don't think they did
reading into something, maybe.
Yeah, I don't think they did that. I just feel like there didn't seem like there was a kind of a mutual respect, and there was kind of a back and forth. I think in the first one there was a better banter between Howard.
Yeah. Well, let's be fair too. In the first film, they weren't kind of pitted against each other like they were in this one. To some degree, you know, with that whole drunken birthday party scene, like they essentially were kind of like big brothers, kind of beating the crap out of each other. Like, hey, get in line. Like, you know, step up. Like, stop being an ass. Like that kind of thing. So there was a little bit more like inherent conflict.
It seemed like they were more equal as opposed to, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, the mentor mentee type of thing.
Yeah,
and I thought that he was—I don't know—I definitely thought he was better than Terrence Howard in the role.
Really?
I do. I just think he is a better actor.
I think he's a better actor.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
But as far as this character,
and we should also mention that I want to say Don Cheadle had a very very small window. I don't remember the exact like amount of time, but a very small window to accept the role. When it got offered to him after Marvel, kind of the whole Terrence Howard fallout, which, you know, evidently took him by surprise, and the lowballing of the salary, and like all of that drama that happened a while back. I remember seeing somewhere that Terrence Howard, and I don't want to misquote it, but I want to say he had like less than 24 hours to decide if he was going to be in the movie or not. So
Don Cheadle?
That was unclear. Don Cheadle had less than 24 hours, I think. I'm going to have to look that up to confirm it. But and also the fact that even though, what's his name, Justin Theroux wrote the script for Iron Man 2, there's been a lot of talk lately about how they improvised a lot of the movie, and I don't think that, you know, that's exactly what you're talking about, where I feel like they improvised a lot of the first film, too. Jeff Bridges pretty much came and said, like, yeah, a lot of this movie wasn't written beforehand. Like, we just straight kind of made it up on the spot, got a feel for the characters and how they were. I feel like Favreau liked the way that that worked in the first film, tried to bring it into the second one, and just the simple fact that Cheadle and Robert Downey Jr. didn't exactly have that same type of connection that Howard
it is what you're saying, where they have to be pitted against each other. He's got to step up and put Tony in his place, as opposed to in the first one where he gets to pal around, he gets to be on a jet and get surprised with like flight attendants and things, situations like that.
And he's kind of the straight guy in the first one to Tony Stark's like wild man. He's like, oh, Tony, order another drink on the plane, like you're crazy, like that kind of thing.
This one, it was like there was no joking around, which if you know, if you look at Cheadle, you're not gonna joke with that guy.
Yeah. That's true.
I just think I believed him. It was a more believable character. I think as far as military personnel go, I think I believe Don Cheadle is more like being a military guy than I did Terrence Howard.
Yeah, I'll buy
I do
that.
Too. I do too.
I'll agree with that too. You want to talk about the ending, the kind of final battle scene, just like the final action, like the final last 30 minutes or something, where it just like all of a sudden turns into like Drone Central and they're out in the middle of the expo or wherever they are, in that kind of like Ouroborium or whatever, that kind of like random park that's half enclosed, half not, and then like you see that shot in the trailer of like them standing back to back and all of these drones like dropping down dramatically around them and stuff. What did you guys think about?
Which was cool, and it could have paid off. And I think, there was a lot going on. It was action packed. It was fun, and I enjoyed the drones. And I liked that they were exploding up all over the place and stuff like that. But the actual fight between Tony, War Machine, and Whiplash.
Yeah.
That lasted less than 5 minutes.
It was laughable. Yeah. It was.
Whiplash was like, sad.
I was like, wait a second. Wait.
It makes no tactical sense to attack after everything has been destroyed.
Yeah.
And even if they, not only that, but I mean, we knew they were going to fight, but the showdown was just, kind of fizzled out. It was pretty weak.
Yeah, it was terrible.
I wanted to see like a big epic battle, and it was like, they punched each other a few times, they shot each other up, Whiplash got him in a stronghold, and then they, combined their Iron Man powers and
which they had done conveniently, accidentally earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's like, oh, they did that. That's like the cheap way out.
It's something out of an 80s buddy cop movie where it's like, something happens early on and they at the situation later on where it needs to happen again, they like nod and wink at each other and like, all right, and then like do this thing, it's just a callback. It's a blatant callback to what happened before, and I feel like this movie was a little better than that. I don't think, and especially for the freaking final battle, like that's a really cheap way to end it.
Yeah, I agree. But I had fun leading up to that point. I liked the laser thing that it could only use once. I had no idea how they're going to get out of that.
Yeah, it was going crazy and then just ducking, boom, and then it was just like, oh yeah.
Why did you can only do that once.
Like, and then you just see it pop off and it's fizzing, and you're like, oh, okay.
And he's like, hammer technology, huh? So like, again, just rubbing it in, like, how much better he is than Justin Hammer at everything.
Well, let's say that the weapon, the X-Wipe, was built up to be this amazing thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it turned out to be worse than a bottle rocket.
Well, it's funny because you know, we saw
at least a bottle rocket. At least a bottle rocket explodes.
Yeah, no, exactly. And, like, it's funny, too, considering, like, the recent, like, we saw Kick-Ass a little while ago, and they did kind of the same thing, where, like, they had this really big build-up about this mysterious thing, and, like, you know, they kept alluding to it and alluding to it, and then at the very end of the movie, you said it's a freaking jetpack, and, like, you know,
with
that...
With Gatling guns.
Yeah, with Gatling guns, exactly. So, like, that one is the case where... They were leading up to something, and then it's, like, used to its full effect in, like, complete over-the-top ridiculous way. And I liked this because they had that same build-up, and then it just completely didn't work at all. I don't know. I thought that was funny. But, yeah, like, I don't understand why Jon Favreau has this kind of obsession with throwing the main villain or a villain into an oversized... mechanical suit at the very end of the films to take on Iron Man, because that was the worst part of the first one, was the battle with Obadiah Stane in that huge suit where he's like, well done, Tony, very nice. Like, you know, he's got this absurd, like, voice modulation, and then Mickey Rourke comes in with this, like, you know, three times the size of his body
suit,
and
even
you're like,
less.
And you're like, come on, like, we just saw this in the last Iron Man, like, you know, they play Mickey Rourke up to be this intelligent guy, and he's doing these things from afar, you know, creating the drones with Hammer's technology, you know, going so far as to install his own stuff, so Hammer's essentially cut out of the loop, and he is, you know, controlling it all, masterminding it from this screen, and then when the plan doesn't work, he just resorts to, all right, I'm just gonna get in my mega suit that I created and go try to take care of the problem myself. I don't know. I think it was just a bad call, I think.
Yeah, even Jon Favreau said that, you know, after they made the first Iron Man movie, when they came into the sequel, said, you know, they learned a lot through the first movie. You know, he even realized that the battle sequence at the end was kind of weak and that they were going to change that. So he acknowledged at some point that they, you know, were going to make in the sequel, they were going to, you know, kind of fix that and make things a little bit bigger. And so I was like, I was expecting a little bit more. So when I actually saw it, I was just kind of like,
I thought they were going to
fight.
I thought they were going to get out of there.
But it was so short.
Yeah, I thought they were going to get out of there. I thought they were going to fight on the globe, and he's going to like he was going to use the whips to like do all sorts of destruction.
Yeah.
And it was going to be just like Iron Man is going to be beat to crack, and War Machine was going to be
beat
up.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be like a very threatening battle. You know, and it wasn't threatening at all.
Well, that's the one chance aside from the spot in Monaco where they did have an opportunity to present like a threat, like a real threat. Is like, okay, you know, they're set up to the point where like, okay, they've been fighting these drones. Like, yeah, they might be exhausted or they might be running out of ammo or something. Like, there's some sort of inherent weakness there, and then. You know, you present Mickey Rourke, like, coming in, like, they had the opportunity to kind of make that a dangerous situation, and then it lasts 3 minutes, and they fix it with
exactly.
A double explosion.
I mean, they had a huge setting to work with, and it was like, alright, you know. But, you know, all in all...
Something I just thought of is, at the end, Rourke, just for some reason, he can, you know, his helmet comes off and on, and he had it off at the end right there, and it was just like... Maybe his whole character motivation is he's not a guy who wants to shoot you. He wants to stab you. And that's why he has the whips. Maybe that's the type of villain this guy is.
Yeah.
He just likes whips.
Or
I don't
that.
Know.
He just really
like,
likes
maybe
whips.
Maybe the guy just has a fetish with whips. I don't know. You know?
Oh, man.
You know, all in all, yeah, the movie had its problems. But in the end...
Nitpicked the film.
Just,
I feel like we got to
exactly.
Come back at the end. We got to talk about what we loved about this film and what was done well and what we hope to see in the next one.
Let's do it.
And I enjoy, you know, I enjoyed what action sequences there were. I enjoyed, had a blast watching. You know, like we talked about the Monaco fight scene. That was a great scene.
I liked the part in that, especially where Tony kicks the car away.
Yeah.
Like, that was
exactly.
Really cool. You don't see that
it
too
felt
often.
Like a heroic moment, like, get out of the way. This is my fight.
Yeah.
I love just seeing the multiple suits I just love the whole Iron Man where he has, like, the underwater suit. He has the Hulk Buster suit. He has the this suit. He, you know what I mean? He has, like, very
specific... You're talking about in, like, the comics and
stuff? In the comics and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I like the design of the drone designs as well that were made. It's like, you know, the Air Force, Navy, Marines. I love those designs. If they make toys of those, I want to buy them because they were pretty freaking cool.
Yeah.
Now it's interesting because the Mandarin is this supernatural force, and we're going to see that versus technology.
Yeah,
magic versus technology.
Dr. Brinkman, do you know a lot about the Mandarin?
Yeah, yeah.
Give me a little bit of a rundown because I'm kind of a noob as far as that goes.
Well, he was their, legendary greatest emperor, united the people, conquered them. Dragon Emperor.
Yeah, I mean, this
is this something where he's like an immortal force? Like, he's been around since the 1300s or something?
Pretty much. I mean, there's a lot of detail to it, a lot of go into. I mean, it involves a dragon.
Okay. Something that probably doesn't fit too well in the world that Favreau has created so far. But
and,
I think that's what you're talking
about.
They
will bring the dragon in. The dragon, when the Mandarin is revealed, you will see a dragon.
Oh, man, I'm wondering if this series is not going to jump the shark, but if it's going to jump the dragon.
No, what you're actually going to see is you're going to see Iron Man, a knight, versus a dragon.
Exactly.
That's
what you're going to see. That's what it is. It's
kind of interesting.
Except, bomb.
Except the knight has missiles.
Yeah. that actually might be interesting. Although, you know, completely unrealistic and inconsistent with the worlds that they've created in the first two films, but...
But they, you know, they're setting it up though with everything else. I mean, they're built through the Iron Man films. They are building up Captain America. They're building up Thor. They're building up the Avengers. So,
yeah, I mean, obviously you're right. But there's
this supernatural Marvel world that we haven't tapped into yet.
Well, Thor's gonna do it pretty up close and personal pretty soon, and we're gonna get a lot into supernatural because they're freaking like Norse gods and like another in another world or something, you know, like there's that whole parallel kind of dimension. So I think you're bringing up good points that, like, yeah, the Marvel world as we've seen it so far has been fairly realistic and could at this point maybe be compared to something that like the DC universe has created, but yeah, bringing in movies like Doctor Strange and stuff that I know Marvel wants to do in the future, they could theoretically take place all in the same world. They just need to start like slowly integrating these kind of supernatural elements in for us to believe it.
Speaking of Thor, what did you guys think of the ending when they revealed Thor's hammer? I thought it was awesome. And they, through the whole movie, they were leading up to it. It's like everyone was talking about, you know, some, you know, problem in New Mexico, or we got to go to New Mexico and.
Well,
and
are we leaping from this into Thor? Because there was a released image of the first appearance of Thor.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, between a hammer and some descriptions, they're describing it as like future tech, future Norse tech. So it's like the past and the future mixed together.
Which is an interesting way to look at it.
Yeah, so magic is technology is the way I think they might be approaching some of the ideas. To try to make it feel all connected, I guess.
To get back to what you're saying, Venkman, personally I thought the hammer looked a little small, and I don't know, just being straight up, like,
there's
I don't know.
Objective way to tell the scale.
Yeah,
you really couldn't tell the scale.
I guess that's true.
Instead of a Coke can sitting next to it. Or
yeah, I guess that's true. I just, again.
Yeah, they should have put something there that, like, showed you how big it actually was.
Right. Because
or just a hand.
Thor is not the character that, you know, like Iron Man, is a character that I know nothing about previously to, you know, 2008 or whenever, like, Marvel announced that they were going to make all these movies, and I kind of just did the preliminary Wikipedia research, you know, stuff like that. But, you know, so I have no experience with the comics. No, I have no idea whether the hammer is, like, 10 feet long or just, like, retractable or, like, what its kind of abilities are.
The hammer is about the size of a cinder block.
Okay.
On a stick.
Okay. That's kind of what it looked like in the movie. I was just a bit... I mean, it was cool to see. Don't get me wrong. It was you know, that, it's exactly what you expect to see in a post-credits sequence. It's not enough to really show you anything, but enough to be like, oh, that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, I thought that that part of it worked really well.
I don't think my wife enjoyed waiting to see a
hammer. Yeah,
those
all
were
that,
some long credits.
All of that time, right? Yeah. There's a lot of people that worked on the movie. But as far as, like, what did you guys think of the... Did you see, P-Vader, did you see the picture of Thor? The,
no.
The image? Venkman, what did you think of the image of Chris Hemsworth?
I liked it. I liked it. It's I like the style. I like the design that they went with.
What did you think about the arms? The, you know what I mean? Like, there's kind of a, like, almost a scaly feel to
Yeah. I mean, it's, I guess it's kind of like chainmail is what it's supposed to be, but in a more Asgardian type way.
Okay. Yeah.
And who knows what it's going to be like in the final film. I mean, this is first photo that's been released. You know, the costume, I thought the costume looked great. It was simple. It wasn't, like, overbearing with a lot of stuff. But who knows what they're going to do in post-production to it, you know? So I think we're going to see something, you know, something even cooler in the long run. But I liked it. I'm really excited for Thor. After I saw that picture, I was like, all right, they are taking this in the right direction.
I thought it was funny people were nitpicking about the beard.
I know, right?
This is my thing. And when I think Viking, I think beard. Now, they always show in the comic books Thor as, for Marvel, as not having a beard. But if you look
at... They have always had a beard.
I'll say the classic. Like Kirby Thor.
Yeah.
But like the older stuff, some of the newer stuff, he has a beard. So it's like, guys, get over the beard.
Yeah.
Vikings have beards.
He looks pretty cool. Like Chris Hemsworth looks pretty intimidating in that picture.
Big.
Like, yeah, he looks jacked. And I like how they only show kind of half of him.
Yeah.
I thought that was kind of
a
cool
it's definitely
choice.
A tease. They're not going to give us the whole thing, but it's enough to get me excited.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to the other Marvel films. Earlier today, it was president of Marvel, Kevin Feige, came out and was like, hey, you know, we're actually thinking about doing the other Marvel films in 3D. So we may see Captain America, Thor, and the Avengers in 3D. Thor, if they end up doing it, will be converted.
Mm-hmm.
But if they decide with the other two, they will shoot Captain America and the Avengers, possibly in 3D. So,
which makes sense. I mean,
especially for the Avengers, that's like
we knew it was going to happen.
Yeah,
we knew
the event movie of in comic book, the biggest event movie in comic book history so far, and like comic book cinematic crossover history so far. So like, of course they're going to try to
like it's as ever existed. I can't even think of.
Of course they're going to try to milk it, like make it an even bigger theatrical experience for everybody, and like make sure that people. Want to see that movie in theaters and need to see that movie in theaters instead of like being like, oh, okay, yeah, that looks cool, but I'm gonna wait till, you know, till it comes home.
It's a danger. I've got to say, it's a dangerous film to make.
Oh,
that
yeah.
Avengers film.
Yeah,
you've rolled all these franchises into one, and it's pretty much gonna bang as big as a single franchise. Probably, I don't think it's gonna be bigger than all. It's not gonna be all of them combined in this mutant. You know.
Yeah. I keep forgetting about Joss Whedon, though, and every time that I kind of snap into it, and I get really excited again. I'm like, oh, yeah, Joss
right?
Whedon.
Yeah,
Joss Whedon's
exactly.
doing a, you know, taking a pass of the script again. So I feel like there's definitely a lot of potential
I wonder, to bring it together. Because, let's be honest, Marvel is an independent studio,
mm-hmm.
and
well,
its funding
was.
Was.
Right. Yeah, that's
yeah,
right.
Was.
That's true.
It's owned by Disney now.
Yep.
Yeah. But even then, like, to siphon money off, they you're not going to, like, get an extra $1 billion to play with for making films. They pretty much bought you and are going to let you do your thing. So what I'm saying is their budget, I'm just wondering how big this budget is going to be. Is it going to be $300 million? Are they going to roll the dice that hard on Avengers? Or?
I think they will.
I don't think they'll go past $200 million.
Oh, I think they might even go to four.
No way.
I do.
No.
I do.
They're
because
not going to give Joss Whedon that kind of money to make it, dude. I'm telling you.
I
they're going to stick with the I think they're going to try and stick with the same budgets that they've used for that they'll use on Iron Man 2 that they've used on Captain America.
But think about it, like, I can see 200 seems like they will at least do it for 200 because all these characters need all these effects.
Yeah, no, exactly. Think about it. Like, think about it from a business standpoint, from somebody at a studio who sees Avatar, which cost, you know, it's rumored to, we don't know how much Avatar, like, the final, what the final costs of Avatar were. There's rumors that it costs anywhere between $350 and $500 million to make. And it walks away with, what, I think it's at $2 billion right now? Am I right about that?
$2.3 billion.
Yeah. So, when you look at it with that kind of, and that was a completely original sci-fi movie with no built-in fan base and no nothing. These people at Marvel and now Disney know for a fact that all of us and all of our friends are going to be in the theaters watching Avengers. I feel like if there's any movie that's a lock for them to be like, well, we know people are going to go see this, because they've been doing all this build-up, it's the Avengers. If they do the Avengers 2 or anything after that, there's not that guarantee that everybody's going to be there to see this movie, but I feel like there's an absolute lock that they know that all of us are going to go see this.
Yeah, and it just feels like this huge relay, and then, like, bam, Avengers is the anchor, and it's just going to take off.
I hope they give it a good budget, but knowing Marvel, they tend to skimp out on the budget.
Yeah. They skimp out on the budget as far as casting and stuff goes.
They tend to hold back a lot of the, you know.
No, I think they put the budget in a way that serves the film as much as possible, and they don't care for actors' egos, and they don't care for director egos.
Well, because most of their movies are ensemble related. Yeah. You know, they enjoy playing up that aspect, which is something that's built into the comics. Obviously, comics are kind of naturally feature multiple, you know, close proximity characters to one another, and therefore that's translated into film. So I feel like they're Marvel and, you know, Disney are working with this feeling of camaraderie and, like, yeah, this kind of brotherhood of, like, you're in this exclusive club of you're doing our comic book movies, and, you know, it's more of a privilege than a right or something, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that being said, I still think that they're going to freaking throw as much money as at the Avengers as they can to guarantee that people, that they're going to make their money back, to make it as completely ridiculous as possible. So anybody on Earth who sees the trailer goes like, wow, I have to see that.
Well, it's like assembling the team, getting the team together, and then fighting. So that's, I mean, I don't even know what villain you would choose.
As far as narrative goes, no idea about what they're going to do.
Just assembling the team would just make a good film.
Yeah.
Then part two will be fighting something.
It's just a straight Batman Forever montage of everyone suiting up for an hour and a half, and then that's it. I think people would pay to go see that, too. But
awesome. Yeah, we're all excited for all this stuff to come through, and in the end, what, Iron Man, we all enjoyed it. Yeah, it had its problems, but it was a fun movie.
Yeah, totally.
You can't deny it was fun. I mean, I want to see it again, but even if you don't feel like seeing it, just go see it once, you know?
Yeah.
There's no doubt you'll have a good time.
Yeah, P. Vader mentioned that he would probably own it on Blu-ray. I liked it, but maybe not enough to do that. Like,
see, I will.
I'm gonna own it.
I'll get it on Blu-ray.
I'll watch
for
the special
sure.
features.
I still have to buy a Blu-ray player though first.
One step at a time.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was good. It was good. And,
I think that's a good representation of kind of our overall opinions of it. Like, I feel like that kind of crystallizes how we all feel about it. Is like, yeah, I liked it a lot in the theater, probably not enough to buy it on Blu-ray. And you guys are like, yeah, I liked it enough in the theater and enough to buy it on Blu-ray. So I feel like that's a good representation for people to, you know, get a good walk away feeling of how we all felt about
it. I'd say probably if you enjoyed the first film, this will deliver on what was delivered in the first film. It's just not going to do anything bigger.
I think you put it very well. It touched the bar.
It touched the bar.
Yeah.
Not break it, not even hit at it.
Yeah.
It just jumped up really high and touched it.
Not a big swipe, but yeah, just grazed it.
Yeah.
Well, that's our discussion on Iron Man 2, and you know, did a little more Marvel movie talk as well. Go out and see it if you get a chance. Recommend it.
Definitely.
So that's it for this week's podcast. Be sure to join us next week.
You want
to
throw out a reference to Blog Within a Blog for people who might not have...
You just did.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
As no one in history has ever thought of this, we own blogwithinablog.com.
Which is pretty mind-boggling that nobody has ever registered
No blog
that.
In history has ever blogged about blogging.
Yeah, I like it. It's like Arrested Development.
I'm sure
like
there are people that blog about blogging, but not in the way that we blog about blogging.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But it's cool, yeah. It's a little thing, if you guys missed last week's podcast, it's a cool little feature we've set up where we're going to kind of be... It'll take you kind of inside the minds of us
here
at Geek Tyrant.
We're still trying to jump in on it ourselves.
Yeah. It's in its infancy, but it's a cool idea, and I feel like it's going to take off here.
It's a bit like special features. It's like the audio commentary of the podcast.
Exactly. Yeah. It's Geek Tyrant special features.
Nice. I like that.
Only people who love Geek Tyrant are going to read it.
Right, yeah. That's cool. But there's also something in there that we should mention. There's a donation thing that you guys can help support us. We're a volunteer-run site here, and you know, we need your help and your support. If you like the site, if you like listening to the podcast, if you like the content that we bring you on a daily basis, then and if you feel so inclined, throw a couple bucks our way and help keep the show going, keep us doing what we're doing, and we really appreciate your help.
And hopefully, we can do this full time one day.
Yeah, that's the ultimate goal. That would be amazing.
That's the goal. So. But thank you, everybody, for listening and joining us. We really appreciate it.
On our super long podcast.
Yeah, this is a long one.
This is a long podcast, so I'd be
congrats
surprised
if you
listening to this right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, if you reach the end. Good stuff. You're a trooper.
You win the game. You win a dollar. But, yeah, thank you very much. We really appreciate it. We appreciate you reading the site. We appreciate all of our readers, all of our fans. We wouldn't be here. We wouldn't be writing all this stuff if it wasn't for you guys. So thank you. Thank you very much. And I'm Elvis Presley.
And I'm Ben P.
P. Vader in the house again.
And Mazer.
And we're signing out. Good night, everybody. Or good day. Or good.
Good?
Good?
Just good.
How about we sign off with the classic Truman Show quote? In case I don't see you, good afternoon, good evening, or good night.
Sounds good.
Peace.
Later.
See ya.